නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ As you all can remember, we were discussing Kajjaniya Sutta, which is translated as being devout. So basically, Buddha starts the sutta with the statement that whatever the past lives that one is recollecting, it is comprising of five aggregates. That's it. I mean, there is no any much of significance in that sense. So whatever, how long that you are recollecting, it may be 10 lives, 100 lives, 1000 lives, million lives, irrespective of how many lives you are reflecting that about the five aggregates. So this indicates that five aggregates are something that we are all kind of circulating. So that would be very much like the center pole. And that is actually highlighted in certain other suttas like Gaddula Baddha Sutta. Yeah, Buddha mentioned like a dog bound to a pole, and he is being sort of restricted by the length of the chain or whatever the rope, and he is simply circulating, simply wandering around that pole, and it is limited to that length of the rope. So very much like that, Buddha mentioned that the worldlings, whoever, wherever they are getting rebirth, it may be in the celestial realm, it may be in the Brahma realm, it may be in the human realm, or it may be in the hell realm, wherever they go, they are simply bounded with these five aggregates. So therefore, understanding five aggregates is quite important. That helps us to understand what is really going on, why we are circulating, why we are again and again coming to birth in this samsara. So basically, this way, getting some deep understanding about five aggregates become quite interesting. And so in this Gaddula Baddha Sutta, Buddha gives a definition to each and every aggregate, and then he mentioned how we have to act based on the aggregates, and what would be the practice, what should be the practice. So likewise, he is giving various insights which would be fairly interesting and again useful for our own practice. Now we already discussed about the form aggregate, the Rupa Upadana Kanda, and then we discuss about the Vedana, that is the feelings aggregate. Then we discussed 2 weeks about the Sanya aggregate, that is the perceptions. And today we have to discuss on the Sankhara, the mental formations aggregate. Now, it is translated as Chetana sometimes, because the main factor of mental formations is Chetana, the volition. But not only that, there are various other mental states, various other constructions that we commonly consider as volitional formations. So Buddha gave a general definition here for volitional formations in the Kajjaniya Sutta. Why bhikkhus do you call them volitional formations? They construct the conditioned bhikkhus. Therefore, they are called volitional formations. So this is a very general statement which is applicable to all each and every aggregate. So volitional formations are responsible for doing constructions, doing all the preparations. So because of that, it is called volitional formations. And in Pali, saṅkataṁ abhisaṅkaronti iti. Bhikkhave tasmā saṅkhārāti vuccati. So whatever already constructed, now because of this volitional formations, they do further additions, further constructions, further preparations. Whatever we encounter in this whole world is all conditioned, all constructed, already based on various either physical or mental phenomena. And without leaving them as it is, we do our own constructions, we do our own preparations on top of that. So this is a kind of a mental activity that we knowingly or unknowingly do, and therefore that is the reason they are called volitional formations. Now, further Buddha elaborate what is the condition that they construct? So that is, they construct condition form as form. So form is already conditioned. It is already, to some extent, it is prepared. Now through mind, whenever we encounter a form, we do further constructions, we do further formations, we do further fabrications. So that is our own part. So that is the task of mental formations. So sankharas do their own additions, subtractions, multiplications, preparations, value additions or value devaluing. So all these things are happening in our mind based on our likes and dislikes, our preconceived ideas, our upbringing, our social status, and due to our cultural impact. So many reasons are there. Because of that, we do our own constructions on top of forms. Similarly, on top of feelings, we do further constructions, further preparations. And sanya, on top of sanya, we do further constructions. On top of sankharas, we do further constructions. That is a very interesting point. Now, sankharas are also further subjected to formations, further subjected to constructions based on this activity, which is available for sankhara. And all the different kinds of consciousness, we do further constructions to that consciousness. So likewise, things become somewhat complicated because these value additions, because of these further preparations, because of these further constructions. And therefore, we need to further understand what is really going on. Now, let me take a simple example. This is somewhat related to vipassana. Now, suppose you are, let me give a simile first. Suppose you are going to watch a movie. So when you are going to watch a movie, so what is actually available is some form of a light projected onto a screen. But because of ignorance, we don't consider that. We are so concerned about the images projected onto the screen. And we forget that they are images, rather we now add some individuation to these images. We consider one image as a girl, one image as a boy, one image as a mother, one image as a father, one image as a teacher. Whatever the different images projected onto the screen, now we are adding our own individuation. We do some kind of attributing a person onto the picture. Now they become real. Now during the movie, so we are so absorbed to it and we are so attracted to it. And at that time, what is available on the screen become live. So they become really live. Now it is not an image, no more an image. So we now live with this and that. So for us, there is say a father, a mother, a daughter, a son, a teacher, maybe different kinds of things are there. So all these kinds of individuation, adding a person into the picture, is done by ourselves. And based on our further likes and dislikes, we further consider, okay, he is beautiful, she is beautiful, he is attractive, she is attractive, and she is not good, he is not good. And if we see a kind of a beautiful scene, then we get attracted to that. Now likewise, all are, by the way, images appearing on the screen, but we are the ones adding so much of value onto it. We basically forget that this is an image. We basically forget this is a cinema. We are in a cinema. We basically forget that we are looking at a film. But we start to live on something projected by the film, or something that the film is depicted. Now we are living in a different world, entirely different world. Even though we are sitting on a chair and watching a cinema, we forget that totally, and now we are living in an entirely different world. Now this is how things are happening. Now the same thing is true to our mind during the other times. Now we probably think that we are looking at a film, and only at that time we are subjected to that sort of illusion, that sort of a delusion. But according to the Dhamma, we can say, so even during the other times where we think that things are very real, so those also have some unreal characteristics. Those also have some deluded characteristics. Illusionary characteristics are there. So what we see is not exactly what is there. So because of why we are looking at, that is why we are seeing. So these are very interesting areas to reflect, interesting areas to some sort of doing kind of a research. So whenever we purposely look at something, that is why we see it. If we are not looking at that, then we don't even see it. So there's a very beautiful simile given by Katukurunde Jnanananda Mahathero. So he say a dog is going on a kind of a bridge. So it is a very narrow bridge, maybe using a, say, prepared by a log. And assume that this dog is going, crossing the river or crossing the whatever water stream. While he is it is at the middle, suppose that it is looking at the water. So at that time, probably it can see the reflection. It can see the it can see its own image, because it is peeping onto the water, and now it can see its own image. But it don't have the understanding that this is a reflection. Now we externally may understand that this is a reflection, but it don't have that understanding. So what happened is that it basically think, so there's another dog inside. There's another dog inside this water. So if it is getting attracted, probably it may wag the tail. And on the other hand, if it is little bit angry about it, then probably it may growl, even bark, because there's another dog inside water. Now it fails to see that this is a reflection. Now whatever the way that it perceives is depending on its own ignorance, and now there may be a kind of an affection if it likes it, or if it doesn't like it, then there could be an anger. By the way, interesting point is, because this dog is looking at the water, that is why it basically see the image. But if it doesn't look at the water, then there is no image even. But the perception that the dog has is that even if I am not looking at it, there is a dog inside water. And therefore, so we have a wrong understanding that even when we don't look at something, that they are there. Suppose now that you are at home, or you are listening to Dhamma, but you may think, okay, at office there are people. Maybe in Sri Lanka there are people, in US there are people. And I mean, convention it is true. So we, even though we don't see them, now suppose that your parents, suppose they are living far away, and probably you are having the perception, okay, they are there living at a particular other place, and they are living and they are there. So conventionally it is true, but on the other hand, so it is a kind of an image appearing in our mind. We can precisely say it very much like a namarupa appearing in our consciousness. But we ignorantly attribute a person onto it, and we consider, okay, this is my mom, this is my father, this is my children, whatever it is, and we take it as true. So likewise, so formations have a great impact coming from the ignorance. avijjapachya sankhara. So because of ignorance that we continue to do all these constructions. Because of ignorance we do all these preparations. Because of ignorance we do a lot of additions, subtractions, multiplications and all these fabrications. So in case there is no ignorance, then there can't be any further formations, there can't be any further fabrications, there can't be any further preparations. We simply perceive whatever it is as it is, without further additions, without further subtractions, without adding our own value judgments. So we may perceive things as it is. Now, interesting point, another point is that because of ignorance, we do various preparations, various constructions, fabrications, and that cause a lot of either suffering or either happiness. Now, in order to discuss that in detail, I like to make use of another interesting sutta, which is available in the numerical discourses. This is in the fourth Nipata, and it is called Volition, Sanchetaniya Sutta. So, now here Buddha discuss in detail about how one may go through happiness and unhappiness because of this sankharas. Now, first he mentioned that because of the ignorance, there is a body. Because of ignorance, there are languages, words, or basically verbal volitional activity. Because of ignorance, there is a mind. Now, let us go through one by one so that we can understand. So, when we have some form of ignorance, in precise terms, when we have sakkaya ditti, we consider that this body is one unit. This body as one unit. This body is a single thing. We forget that it constructed with so many components, and it is with different elements that we all forget that. For us, so this is my body. And we consider it as my body, it is one unit. It is kind of a compact unit. And now, suppose that you encounter kind of a situation, there your body is subjected to some sort of an illness. Now, so you call it as, I am sick now, I am ill now. But even we don't consider this is the body now got ill, rather we interpret that I got sick. Now, immediately that means we have a kind of an inherent kind of a belief that this body is I. We take it so strongly as this body is nothing other than I. This is myself. So I am sick. But actually what happened is that the body is sick. But now I consider it as I am sick. That is how we communicate. That is how others may understand. But internally, psychologically, so what I perceive is that I am sick. So this body is something for me, and we take it for granted, and now I am feeling unhappy because my body is sick. I am sick, so I am not happy. I want to get rid of it. And on the other hand, suppose that I am going through some pleasure. I experience some sort of a pleasure. So that also I interpret as I am enjoying, I am happy, I feel quite happy, because now the body is going through some pleasurable sensations, but I interpret as I am happy. Now we take the body as something substantial, we take the body as something, as a compact unit, and it belongs to me, and because of this notion, now I am going through various happiness and unhappiness. Now, similarly, we consider our speech. So, I am telling something, so he is listening, she is listening, she understood, he understood, or he didn't understand, or she didn't understand, but I am talking. So, for us, the speech is something. For us, the speech is something substantial, something very important. And if I make any mistake, then I feel a little guilty. I feel a little upset because I made a mistake while I am talking. So probably others might look down me, criticize me because I made a mistake. So I feel a little uneasy because my speech went wrong. So I used the wrong word. So unknowingly or knowingly, I used a wrong word. So others might have misunderstood that. So I now feel a little uneasy. Or probably while I am talking, probably I used kind of a wrong word because the other person also can feel uneasy. Assume that you are giving a public speech, that you are making some note about someone or something or another religion or whatever it is. Now the listeners might get offended. So that is also possible. So whenever we are listening to sounds, whenever we are listening to speech, so we consider that that is something very critical, that is very important. They have to use the words very carefully. That is accepted. So that's why we call it Samma Vacha. It has to be truthful. It has to be proper words. And we should never do a kind of backbiting. So different things are there. Some virtues are there attributed to speech. And so for us it is very important. And so using speech, then we can do various wholesome or unwholesome karma. So we consider speech, language, words, all these things as something quite substantial, something available, something very true because of ignorance. On the other hand, for us, the mind is also something which is always thinking, and we consider everyone is thinking. So I should think all the wholesome things. I should never think unwholesome thing. So always thinking is part of the mind. So I am recognizing mind as something thinking, always thinking. So always mind has to have thoughts. So this is the kind of understanding we have typically about the mind. And therefore, whenever I notice that some sort of an unwholesome thought has appeared, I feel a little uneasy. And probably I consider it very important, and probably I may act upon it, and then I do even wrong thing, wrong bodily activity, or maybe I use wrong words, so it becomes a wrong verbal activity. Because I consider whatever the thought appeared in the mind as very important, something substantial, so I acted upon it. On the other hand, so at that moment probably I feel unhappy. Kind of regrets may arise in the mind. On the other hand, if I do something very good, so certain thoughts appear in the mind and we taken, considered them, that's useful, and I did it immediately and probably others also got happy. So I also feel happy, pleasurable, because I did something good. So whenever thoughts are appearing in the mind and we consider them as important, they are substantial, and accordingly, so I feel either happy or unhappy because of ignorance. Now this is the very first kind of teaching that Buddha deliver here in terms of these bodily formations, in terms of taking that there is a body, and taking words as something substantial, verbal volitional activity, that is as substantial, and taking mind also as something substantial. So when we take them for granted, we do various either bodily activities, verbal activities, or mental activities, and based on that, we feel either happy or unhappy. So that is one area that we need to understand. Another interesting area is that these, say, bodily formations can happen because of our own initiation, or someone else also can initiate these bodily activities. So whenever I want to do, say, a kind act, say I want to help someone, probably I myself feel empathetic, about someone else's suffering, and now I come forward and now I am helping. That is possible. On the other hand, say I am not doing anything, so another person come and tell, why don't you do something, you should help them. Then I get kind of an urgency and then I come forward and then I help. So likewise, these bodily activities can happen because of my own initiation or because of someone else's initiation, someone else prompting. Similarly, my words also same. So I sometimes talk my own. I think I have to tell, I have to speak. So I am immediately coming out of my own will, my own intention. Or someone else can persuade me to talk. Then I am talking. Similarly, thinking. Also Buddha mentioned, it can happen your own. You may be thinking on and on, you may be thinking, so something, some incident has happened, so you are thinking by your own. Sometimes we are not thinking, we do various other activities without thinking a particular thing. But then someone else, maybe your friend, come and ask you, why don't you think about it? So now I am thinking. Now you can see, even thinking can get influenced by someone else. So that is another point that Buddha highlights. So all these bodily activities, taking body as something substantial, as a compact unit, can happen because of our own initiation or someone else's impact. As a result of that, I do various bodily activities, now I feel either happy or unhappy. Similarly, the verbal activities, similarly the mental activities. Now another area, now this is the second important point. So doing it because of our own intention or someone else's persuasion. Another area that Buddha highlights in this sutta is that it can happen knowingly or it can happen unknowingly. That means, say, you are doing some bodily activity, some activities are naturally happening. And you don't need to even have kind of an intention, so you are habitually doing it. Certain internal programs are there, so they come forward and they immediately take you. The body is working and you don't need even to initiate it. Things are happening. So very much like involuntary activities. So you don't need to have your own initiation. And you don't need to maintain any mindfulness, any clear comprehension. Those are not necessary. Things are happening naturally, effortlessly. So those are also bodily activities. And because of that also sometimes you get pleasure or sometimes you get displeasure or unhappiness. And similarly, say certain activities are there that you need to purposely do. I mean, you need to have your own volition, your own initiation. So your participation, your contribution is crucial. So you have to purposely do that. So you know very well that you are doing it. Intention is so important, so intense. So this is also there. So the clear comprehension is very well present there. So therefore Buddha mentioned these two categories are there. There are activities which are unintentional and there are activities which are quite intentional. Asampajana kaya sankhara, sampajana kaya sankhara. So these are two other sides that Buddha highlights here. Similarly, if we consider speech, sometimes we are just talking and we even don't know what we are talking. There is no kind of an intention. So assume that you are discussing with various others about politics and all blah blah things, economic crisis. So you already that you have gone through a lot of news reads and you have gathered so much of information and others have also done the same thing. Now you are at the office and while you are at the train, now you encounter a couple of friends and now you are talking. And things are coming naturally, this and that, all are stored in your mind. So they are coming one after the other. So you are talking. Probably you can't even remember what you are talking. So there is no much intention, but you all are simply talking, chattering. So we can say the clear comprehension is not significant there. It's not, its function is not visible there. So it is very much like asampajana, that unknowingly, habitually, we are talking. On the other, but that talking also causes either happiness or unhappiness. That is another side. Even though we are unintentionally doing it, even though we are habitually doing it, effortlessly doing it, but that is a result. Either we may go through happiness, or either we may go through unhappiness. So that product is available, that result is available, irrespective of either we do it volitionally or unintentionally. Now the other side is that we speak volitionally. Now suppose at the moment, right now, say I am supposed to deliver a Dhamma talk. Now I am intentionally doing it. I have gathered some information, I have prepared, you all are listening. So I am intentionally, purposely, with clear comprehension, with understanding, now I am delivering a speech. I am delivering a Dhamma sermon. So probably because of this, suppose that I feel happy. So if I can't do it properly, or you misunderstood, or I misunderstood and wrong, I delivered something wrong, then probably I can be unhappy. That's also possible. That means with respect to speech, even when I do some intentional, purposeful, with clear comprehension, either I can be happy or either I can be unhappy. Now, same thing is true for mental activities. Now, sometimes we are thinking, there is no much understanding. Thoughts are always occupied in the mind. And we don't know even much about the content about it. But the mind is fully occupied. Mind is continuously talking. There is something to think. Always there is something to think. Thinking is going on. And I didn't initiate it, by the way. I didn't purposely think, but mind is thinking. And Buddha mentioned, even because of that sort of an activity, there could be either happiness or unhappiness. Suppose that you are used to think about loving kindness, that always you are trying or training your mind to say wish others happiness. So you are training it again and again. So you do it as a kind of a meditation. Loving kindness meditation. Now later time, suppose you get a free time, even without your participation, even without your intention, now the mind starts to think the same thing. Because mind is kind of a, we can say, kind of an instrument, which always get kind of influence of the recent activities, what it being habituated to, what it is fairly familiarized. So now mind is thinking on its own about loving kindness. Maybe you get happy, because while what mind has thought is something wholesome, so you feel happy, you feel lighter, you feel appreciative. On the other hand, suppose that you are quite angry, again and again thinking bad about a particular person, that he denied what you asked. He basically refuted what you ask, whatever the thing that you did. So likewise, you have kind of a grudge now. Now while traveling, you are thinking about him. While at home, you are thinking about him. While at the office, you are thinking about him. Now again and again, you are thinking about him. Anger is growing. Suppose now you are coming back home and you are driving your car. And you didn't want to think, but mind is thinking. Thinking about what? About that particular person. Angry. So either without your participation, without your own initiation, now mind is thinking about that particular person and you feel angry. So you feel unhappy. So the unhappiness is possible because of this unintentional thinking. And another way is that you are intentionally thinking. Suppose that you are training about loving kindness, and you are purposely training, or you are purposely training, say, Buddha Anusati, reflections on the Buddha's qualities. So they are so sublime, and more you think, more you reflect, you feel quite happy, your mind feels quite lighter, uplifted, and fair amount of blissful experiences going on. So you feel quite happy. So intentionally you are thinking. Intentionally you do various reflections. So you feel quite happy. On the other hand, intentionally you can become quite unhappy by thinking. Say you intentionally switch on the TV, you intentionally watching the kind of news. Now you gathered something. Now you are intentionally thinking what's going to happen in the future, what would happen next month, whether there would be petrol, diesel, fuel available next week. So now you start thinking. Now this purposeful thinking can make you quite anxious, can make you quite even depressed, quite unhappy. On the other hand, you can think positively, purposely, and you intentionally, positively, purposely thinking, and it can make you happy. Now you can see, so these are the areas that Buddha elaborate when we are considering these volitional formations. So therefore, volitional formations are quite descriptive in that sense. So one area is, because of our ignorance, we consider this body as one unit. We take it for granted, and it is similar for another person. I mean, I take someone else's body for granted and it is there. And we call, he is there. I call, she is there. He is beautiful. She is beautiful. She is pretty. He is ugly. He is bad. So likewise, I mean, based on the body, we have this kind of a perception. And because of that, we feel either happy or unhappy. Similarly, the speech, words, similarly the mind, mental activity, we consider that there is mind, it is always thinking, it's part of the mind. So we consider it, we taken it for granted, and as a result of that, I feel unhappy or I feel happy. Sometimes we can say, why did I thought like that? I shouldn't have thought like that. So that means, so I consider this mind is something substantial, this mind is something belong to me, and as a result of that, I thought something bad about him, so I feel regret about thinking like that. Maybe on the other hand, the positive side also possible. Say, it's good that I thought about him. It's good that I beforehand thought about it. So likewise, I can appreciate my own thinking. So these are areas, one area. The other area that Buddha highlights is that I can do it because of my own initiation, or things can happen because of someone else's persuasion. So, but I am the one feeling happy or unhappy. It may come to the bodily, verbal and mental activity. The other part is, things can happen without my intention. It's simply happening as a kind of a habit, kind of habitual activities, unintentional activities, involuntary type of activities. Because of that also, I feel happy or unhappy. The other part is, I purposely, with clear comprehension, with proper intention, I can do various bodily activity, things can happen, I can do various speech, verbal activity, and I can do a lot of mental activity. Because of that also, I can feel happy or unhappy. Now likewise, you can see these constructions are fairly distributed, fairly invaded our mind. So all these are constructions. So when I taken things for granted, this body is available, this speech, word is available, because of ignorance, this mind is available. So I have already taken things for granted, Now, because of that itself, I do various constructions. I feel happy or unhappy. And I can initiate it, someone else can initiate it. So, further constructions are now happening, further preparations are now happening. I am acting upon it, and I feel happy or unhappy. And probably I can do certain things, further preparations. Habitually, it is happening. If you simply allow your mind and you don't participate, but mind doing its own preparations. Mind is habituated to do it. Mind is so much conditioned to do all these preparations. Internally, it is constantly doing it. Even without your participation, it is doing this all constructions. And we can participate and we can intervene and we can do further constructions. So likewise, so these constructions, all these preparations are in that sense fairly complicated in that sense. So how to stop it? Now that is another area that we need to think. Now even before the Buddha, so people understood, so these have to be stopped. But the ways that they used is basically not sufficient. Say for example, if you consider samatha meditation, so you are tranquilizing the mind, calming down the mind. So now there are no much constructions. Suppose your mind is absorbed to one object. You are thinking about a particular color. Again and again you are taking that to your mind. Now the mind get locked up in this color. Mind is fairly conditioned in this color. So that's all you have. That's all you perceive. So all the other preparations, all the other constructions are temporarily subsided. Now your mind is conditioned to this particular color and that's it. So you feel quite happy, you feel quite blissful, calm, tranquil, because all other constructions, all other preparations are temporarily subsided. So that's why yogis during that time, Hindu yogis, so they were doing all these samatha meditations and they thought, okay, I mean this is liberation. I can stop all these by absorbing to something. By attaining certain jhana, I can stop things. To some extent it is true, but the main root cause of constructions is not properly recognized. So they were using the concentration power, they have stopped constructions, preparations, but whenever the concentration is not available, whenever mind feels free, again the construction started. All fabrication started, all preparation started, because the root causes are still available. So that is the crucial finding of the Buddha. So these constructions do happen because of ignorance, avijja paccaya sankhara. So till you have ignorance, till the mind is conditioned with ignorance, depending on ignorance, constructions do happen. Now we have to talk about ignorance in that sense. So we have to address ignorance. So that is where the Vipassana meditation is so important, where we are trying to recognize this ignorance, understand ignorance. Or we are, on the other hand, we are trying to arouse wisdom. We are trying to understand, we are trying to develop further understanding about how things are. So when we don't have ignorance, when the mind is free from ignorance, then further constructions can't happen. You can simply allow your mind to be free. But if there is no ignorance, there can't be any constructions. You simply see things, but no constructions. You may hear things, but internally there are no fabrications. You may smell things, odors, but internally mind is calm. You may go through various states, but mind is unaffected. Mind is calm. Your body may go through various sensations, pleasurable, painful, neutral, but mind is unaffected, mind is calm, mind doesn't involve with constructions, preparations. Mind could maintain its internal silence, inner silence. And mind can encounter certain thoughts, but on top of thoughts, on those thoughts, there are no further additions. There are no further thinking. Thoughts come and go. That's it. Mind remains calm. Because ignorance is eliminated. Now, this is very interesting phenomena. Possible only when the mind is equipped with wisdom. Mind is strengthened with wisdom. Mind is fairly illuminated with wisdom. So, therefore, wisdom is very crucial. Now, that is why we are so much talking about Vipassana meditation and various techniques in order to remove ignorance and to strengthen wisdom. So that's why Buddha again and again mentioned, so try to be heedful about developing wisdom. Don't be sort of heedless, rather be heedful about developing wisdom. So when mind is equipped with wisdom and it is less ignorance, and then there can't be too much of preparation. There still could be preparations, because if there is even say subtle amount of ignorance is available. So that means only when one becomes an arahant that one's complete stopping of fabrications may happen. Till that, there are still little bit of fabrications can happen. Time to time fabrications can happen. But the inclination, but the direction is to calm down all these mental formations. Calm down conceptual proliferation. Calm down too much thinking, obsessive thinking, excessive thinking. So thinking actually represents in that session, that in that sense, for fair amount of ignorance available in our mind. Say, if I am thinking too much, that indicates that internally my mind is affected by fair amount of ignorance. That's why too much preparation is going on. But on the other hand, assume that there is subject that you need to think. You are knowingly thinking under your supervision, under the mindfulness you are thinking. That is also possible. And assume that you completed thinking about it. Now you should have the ability to stop it. You've done it, you have completed it, now stop the mind. Again, mind has to become quiet. Now, if we can think of this kind of a scenario, that means thinking happens under our surveillance, thinking happens under our supervisions, thinking happens under our control. We use it as like an instrument. Like suppose that you want to listen to a speech. So you are now listening. Now it is done. You already listened to it. Now you assume that you are switching off the computer. Now you are stopped that. So there is nothing to listen now. So you feel quiet. Similarly, so if we can use our mind faculty, when it is necessary, I am using it. When it is not necessary, I am not using it. Rather, keeping the mind quiet. So these are very interesting areas that we can think of. We can direct our practice so that volitional formations are not much influence in the mind. Volitional formations are not eating our mind. Volitional formations are not really have great impact on our mind. So that is why Buddha again and again highlights in this Kajjaniya Sutta, so long these volitional formations have intruded my mind, invaded my mind, devoured my mind. But now you are behaving in such a manner that you are not allowing volitional formations to intrude, eat or devour your mind. Rather, you are dismantling them. Does not building them up. You are dismantling volitional formations. Similarly, you are abandoning them, you are not clinging to volitional formations. You are scattering them, not amassing them. And you are extinguishing volitional formations, you are not kindling them. So you can see, so Buddha's teaching, I mean, in that sense, quite matching. So these volitional formations are constantly occupied the mind. Now you are trying to abandon them. You are trying to extinguish them. You are trying to dismantle them. You are trying to abandon them. So that mind become calm, mind become tranquil, mind become free from inner chatter, mind become free from thinking. So mind is simply conscious, simply aware, but no thoughts. So inner silence is something available. So if one is able to touch this inner silence, then kind of a paradigm shift happen. So he may understand, okay, this kind of a calmness, tranquility, this kind of inner silence, stillness is available. Previously I thought, okay, mind is nothing but thinking, it's a kind of a thinking machine. Now we recognize, okay, it is thinking is something external, something, say, if necessary we can take, otherwise kind of awareness is available, conscious awareness is available. Conscious awareness does not need thinking, it is not compulsory to have thinking for this conscious awareness. So it is something present, something available. So in that sense we are coming to the calming down of mental formations. Sabba sankhara samatha. So all the mental formations are now calmed down. You are not getting agitated when you are seeing things. You are not get agitated when you are hearing things. You are not get agitated because whenever you are smelling, tasting, touching, or even when cognizing certain thoughts in the mind, rather you are able to maintain calming down of all mental proliferations, calming down of all mental formations, volitional formations, all are calmed down. Your mind is not interested of doing any fabrications, interested of doing any preparations. So that is where we can say we have stopped mental formations devouring our mind. Mental formations are now not intruding our mind, invading our mind, not occupying our mind. So mind has its own freedom. So with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon, Sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So for anyone who'd like to participate in this Q&A portion of today's sermon, you can raise your hand to ask the question directly, or you can also send it via the chat.
Good. Everybody has stopped preparations. No fabrications.
All permissions have stopped.
Yeah. Everything stopped. No fabrications.
As you said that, here comes all the questions. okay. I'd like to invite the first person to ask the question. Ria?
Yeah. Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, I'm reading The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle these days.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of things that we discuss are mentioned there. And but he does not mention mindfulness. He always mentions consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So the consciousness means, when, as I understand, it means when the mind is free from thinking, just awareness. But the mindfulness means we are thinking wisely with wisdom. Is that correct?
His terminology seems, different from the way that we explain, or with the Buddhist terminology. So mindfulness,
yes.
You can have mindfulness to something existing. Say for example, when there is bodily activity, you can be mindful. Say you are talking, you can be mindful. You are listening, you can be mindful. Or you are, say, walking, you can be mindful. You are breathing, you can be mindful. So that way we can say, okay, mindfulness is there with some activity. But on the other hand, say there are thoughts in the mind and you can be mindful about that. But the interesting point is, you can be mindful even without an object. Suppose that there is no thoughts at all. You can simply be aware of it. And we sometimes use the term awareness in English rather than using mindfulness. But I mean, no harm even using the term mindfulness, because mindfulness either can have object or either don't need to have an object. So, but initially we need to have an object because we are trying to avoid distractions and our mind get focused onto something. So therefore, we are being mindful on that, but onto which that we have focused. We are using it as a mechanism to minimize distractions. But later we develop not only mindfulness, clear comprehension, wisdom, insights, all these things. And later mind give up, abandon, let go of all these objects. Now mind become free from any objects, but still it maintain mindfulness. It is conscious, as he mentioned, so it is conscious. So, I mean, different terminologies we can use, but we can say it's very much like the same experience. So ultimately, even without any object, so the mind can be conscious, mind can be aware. So that consciousness is available. So that kind of conscious awareness is available, and it is not something that I created, that it is not something that I prepared. It is a kind of an inherent quality of the mind. So we were playing on the projections, we were playing with the images, but the screen is there, the reflective awareness is there, the say effortless awareness is there, and we can say it is objectless, there is no object, but awareness is there.
Yeah, so basically it's the same. I mean, he's using different terms, but describing the same thing. That's what I understood. From what you explained. Okay, thank you very much, Nancy.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Tutor Debbie for the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, you explained it very clearly, this volitional formation, and you also said that when we do samatha bhavana, it's calming. It's really to lose the ignorance and develop the wisdom. Is we have to vipassana.
Mm-hmm.
Now that is, of course, when we are doing meditation. Now, very practically, when in ordinary life, in a sort of a volatile situation, how does one calm, well, acting with, wise manner without actively doing what we shouldn't be doing and having all these volitional formations charging into the brain?
Yeah, so that is where, I mean, the mindfulness also come to the picture. So the mindfulness will tell us, okay, again the fellow has started, again thinking has started. You feel burdened, you feel unhappy, or you feel agitated, you feel excited. So that means that I have lost that inner calmness. So again, mind has become agitated. So that has to be felt, and that has to be indicated by the mindfulness. Now, say for example, if we consider, say, Indriya Bhavana Sutta, so Buddha is asking us, so you have to be aware when mind become either, say, agitated because of the happiness or agitated because of unhappiness. So it's a kind of an agitation, kind of an excitement happens in the mind. So when it is there, so we feel it. So if mindfulness is available, it will indicate us, it will sort of warn us, okay, again it has agitated, again mind has drifted from the middle. So the middle range is fairly calm, quiet, quite ordinary, very simple, clean, but the agitated state is always kind of an excitement. So so that you feel, you feel kind of burdened, you feel excited. So you feel maybe uneasy. So these are something that we need to feel. So then we can apply different methods. I mean, not simple, not single method. There may be various methods available so that you can bring your mind back to that unagitated state. Bring your mind back to that very calm, quiet, simple state. And it is quite equanimous, not fairly pleasurable or unhappy. Rather, it is very much quite ordinary, very simplified, equanimous. So bringing that mind back to that equanimity. So it is the practice.
Yes.
So, I mean, we have to encounter all these difficulties, of course. So whenever we encounter whatever these difficulties, whatever incidents, so the mind get agitated, true. But we may quickly notice it. And now it's our duty to return back to that normalcy, return back to that, say, baseline.
So what I'm hearing is that to get, in a very volatile situation, to prevent this agitation and various volitional formations and all these things coming on, is one, to prevent that is to really to practice all of this in the bhavana first, meditation,
mm-hmm.
and then apply that to our
daily activities. That can be said.
So it is the practice. Then we have to be mindful, and then we have to have some samatha bhavana and the vipassana. We have to really develop that to be able to have a calm mind in these situations.
Yeah. So as you said, correct. That's why for example, you are able to calm down all mental proliferations during the sitting session at first, for example.
Yes.
Now you are familiarizing with it again and again, yet you are able to do it. And now you feel confident. And now you are trying to do the same thing while walking. But it could be difficult because now your eyes are open and you have to walk.
Yes.
And maybe others are also around you. Maybe various sounds also happen. But now you are doing kind of an exercise, kind of a training. Even among all these difficulties, you are calming down mental proliferations. You are calming down preparations. Now suppose you succeed there. Now you are going to the supermarket. How about applying the same practice there? Now various things are there, things are very colorful, very attractive, and so much of people are there, and you have to go to the cashier, and many things are there. How about maintaining a calm mind? How about maintaining inner silence while at the supermarket? Could be difficult, but that is where we have to season the mind. We have to go to those situations in order to see, when I am going wrong, when I can't practice, when I can't maintain, when can I maintain the status? Maybe while at your home, at your meditation room, definitely you can do it. But how about the other places?
Yes.
How about the other places?
I think also the difficulty is when there is an aggressive person on the other side, or maybe it's the cashier in the supermarket. That is a challenge, because I now even go to the supermarket and all that, but
yeah.
I can keep equanimous. But
yeah.
And if you come to the cashier and the cashier does it smoothly without any problem, then also you can manage.
Yes, yes.
But it is when there is somebody being aggressive or being negative, being doing the wrong thing, just trying to be discriminative or whatever.
Yes, yes.
Then only the agitation comes,
Yes,
one
yes.
Day.
Yes, yes, definitely.
So then only the challenges, that is the challenge. challenge. And
yes.
Sometimes, however much vipassana you have done, it doesn't work, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know?
So actually, they are the ones giving us the exam paper. So someone has to do it, no? I mean, how otherwise, how are you going to do it? So in that sense, we
yes.
can consider, so all these problem makers
yeah.
are helping us to develop in a way. Because otherwise we will never encounter these kind of situations if everybody is appreciating us, everybody is saluting us, everybody is respecting us. So, I mean,
yes,
then we
yes.
think, okay, now I am an anagami. Because
yes,
because
yes.
we are anagami till another person is not agitating me. But whenever someone is agitated, okay, again, I feel angry, I feel anxious, I feel unhappy. So that represents still internally a lot of problems are available. I mean, still I am not, say, calm enough, or still a fair
yes,
amount of ignorance
yes.
is available.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that is because we haven't enough wisdom
yeah.
at that moment.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. So actually, on the other hand, we can't immediately achieve these states. So that's why, I mean, it's a kind of
yes.
a gradual practice. So that's why we always have to be vigilant, always have to be mindful, and when things go wrong, we have to notice that, and as quickly as possible, again, we have to calm down, again, stop thinking, again,
yeah.
again, keep the mind quiet. So it's again and again, it's kind of a repeated process that we need to go through.
And as you say, I mean, one has to be advancing the spiritual path to be able to be calm all the time.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, isn't that right, Mama?
Yeah, that's also true.
Cool.
I mean, assume that you are asked to implement a particular task. So at that time, if it is the job assigned to you and you are the best possible person to do it, then we have to take the challenge. Then we have to do it properly.
Yes.
It doesn't mean that we are always trying to hide us so that our mental formations never come out. But when things are difficult. Even that situation, if we are able to maintain kind of a calm atmosphere within ourselves, that indicates fair amount of maturity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it matured, with wisdom comes maturity.
Yes, yes, yes.
Thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, yeah.
Excuse me. Because when I go for a walk in the morning, I see this gentleman. I meet this gentleman and I say, good morning, and he was officious. And he's a nice gentleman. But what comes to my mind at once is that he didn't treat his wife well. I have nothing to do with it, but that is what it comes to my mind, you know, like I only think, what does it, how does it matter to me or nothing? But, you know, that it's very silly that it comes to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So has it impacted? Is it because I think like every gentleman should treat their wives properly, or like is it what is it in my mind? I don't know, sorry, but...
Yeah, I think it is, I mean, in a way, kind of a proliferation, because, I mean, I am adding too much onto the picture. My own judgments, I have a kind of a preconceived idea that he didn't properly treated his wife well. So that with that kind of an preconceived idea, now I am meeting him. So even when he is all right with you, I have kind of a bad impression about him. So this is where that we need to properly understand. So this part that we have added from our side is part of perception we have. And that comes under the sanya aggregate. And the other part is that we do these fabrications, constructions that comes under the sanskara aggregate. So this is what we need to properly analyze. And if we understand this our own addition, then we can leave it aside. If we understand our own perception, then we can leave it aside rather than victimize to it. So that's why we need to practice. So now we are abandoning it. Now I have a perception, so I'm holding kind of a view about this person. I heard that he is not treating his wife properly, so I have heard this. So now based on that I have a perception about him. Now I am dividing it to the pieces. So this comes under perception aggregate, this comes under sanskar aggregate. So let me clarify my mind, let me cleanse my mind from these two rather than holding it into the mind. So whenever next time I feel kind of this sort of perception, so let me let go of that rather than accumulating, rather than strengthening it. So whenever I meet him, let me avoid doing any constructions. I'm just making a smile and I just do my own, pass my own way. And less burden to the mind, no work to the mind. Just a gesture, that's it. So likewise, I mean, thing is that everywhere we can have perceptions. Everywhere we can do various mental formations. So this is just a single example. So that is why, I mean, we are learning about these aggregates. So whenever we come across this kind of a situation, we can little bit of do a reflection where, which part this belongs to, which part this belongs. This little analysis help us to properly understand the situation. And then we are analyzing our subjective experience. On that, with that kind of an analysis, now we can abandon them. Now we can a little bit of do a proper practice. And rather than getting victimized to the process, now we can face the situation in a naive way. We can face the situation with more fresh way without being influenced by our own judgments.
But there is some kind of my ego also.
Yes. Another explanation, I can't remember exactly where I read it. Now, whenever we encounter a particular person, actually there are four persons working there. So one thing is that the real person, say I as a person and he as a person, then two persons. On the other thing is, I have a preconceived kind of a person in my mind. So that is, so I have projected a person in my mind about this particular person. And he too have a projected person in his mind about me. So in that sense, we have many persons working in that situation. So,
yes, I understand.
Yeah. Thiruvan Sannai.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Mahisha for the next question.
Thanks, Jennifer and Fante. Today's discussion is really helpful for me because I actually experiencing some situations like similar to the discussion we had today. So if I say, like, I always try to check my mind, now it becomes a habit, when I'm not working for my, living, all the other times I try to figure out, okay, where this pillow go, where it's hanging now, and what it's doing now, like that. Now, having said so, sometimes, especially when dealing with other parties, maybe family members, maybe people I associate, sometimes certain things that they say with anger or aggression, again, that moment also, I check, okay, now I'm going to get into a trap. What should I do? But I think, it signals comes to me like that, but in a second that it all goes sometimes, and then I get into the trap. And then I reply, or I, think differently, you know, trying to figure out, okay, next, what I'm going to say next, what I'm going to say next, like that. So in that, in other words, I'm tangling with that situation. Sometimes I get the awareness, okay, this is it. Now you're going to get into trouble because now your mind is going to, you know, agitate. So let's focus on the breath or whatever the close thing that I can look at in my body. So sometimes I get the sensation, sometimes I get the heat. I can feel the heat comes because other part is aggressive, so my body is trying to get ready to react to it. And I go get those signals. So I try to watch on that, and then I can calm myself. But 50-50, it is like sometimes it's successful, sometimes it's not. Still knowing, okay, you are now in trouble, still my mind going, I'm trapping it. Sometimes after, tangle with it or not, so I reply, a couple of times I exchange words with the other party, and then I realize, okay, you should stop now. You have gone so far. I told you not to tangle, but you tangle now. You should stop now, and then I stop, and then I walk away. Or I move on with whatever, or I just face it, I keep quiet and looking at that person's eyes. And then, so like that, there are situations that I can actually win, I would say. So when something like winning, you know, I feel like, oh yeah, you have done really well. Now you manage to control yourself and you are right in the path. Like that, I get the satisfaction. And at times when I fail, I feel like, oh, stupid. What idiotic thing you did. Why you did it like that? So like that, I blame to myself. And then that blaming goes for some time, and I actually cannot comprehend myself why I'm doing all those. And then at the end, I think, oh, why are you blaming yourself? Can't you remember that Bhante always say you don't have to blame yourself? Like and that's the stage where I am. And sometimes I get very frustrated because of that. And today's discussion, actually, I felt, it's really good. And I felt like, okay, it happens to people. And I think at the end of your, you know, the Dhamma talk, what I felt was, I should do more vipassana, probably then I develop more to quickly understand what the other party is doing, and in what kind of a way that I have to behave. Because sometimes when I'm silent or when I'm withdrawing myself, thinking, okay, this is it, you have to step down, and the other party getting more aggressive, because they know that now I change myself. And they know that I'm going to get hibernated. And then they raise their voice. Too much of, you know, things comes up. Sometimes I lose. That's the point I'm losing. So, I don't know. I feel like I need to develop myself more to overcome those challenges. But it's really challenging, Bhante, at times. Because especially when people get to know that you are changing and you are practicing something, people are aware about it, especially people close to me, and then they try to, you know, sometimes they blame, oh, because of Buddha, because of this, you are in that, you are doing meditation, because of that, you are like that, and blame me, but I don't care for those blames, because I have heard it 1,000 times, and I know the people are like that, because I heard from Dhammajiva Thero that people will be like reacting like that if they find out that someone is changing. So that is okay, I can bear that. I'm used to that. The problem is when it's getting more, it's like a inside me, I can see in my body it's getting very heated to a particular point. That's how that I couldn't control it. I could control, I can just watch it, but sometimes time comes where I had to give up. Any advice on that?
Yeah, actually, what you are talking is quite common. I mean, it is common to me, it is common to others, and this is how we all are training ourselves. So always we feel that sometimes we feel offended, sometimes we feel that I am being neglected, I am being looked down, or sometimes I feel praised. So whenever we go through all these different incidents, so the second thought appearing, maybe later time, that again and again thoughts are popping up, and they are trying to prove that you did well, you did bad, you did wrong, and all these things. And this is the time that eye making, mind making is happening. This is the time I need to notice. Maybe during the incident, I tackled it properly. Either I did properly or improperly, I tackled it. At that time, I don't know, I mean, there may be instant eye making, mind making happens. But more strongly eye making, mind making happens later time when you are sort of reflecting about that incident. So many thoughts are appearing, trying to prove that you were there. You did well, you did wrong, or you did bad. So this is where strongly trying, I mean, our ignorance is trying to sort of cheat us, telling that there is a person, there is someone, there is some kind of an individual. So that place we need to minimize. So this kind of inner chatter now we need to minimize. So this is what we need to properly notice. So this is exactly where eye making, mind making happens pretty strongly. So when we did something, after some time there is this reflective thoughts going on, kind of a second thought going on. That has to be minimized. So when we did something, that's it, done. How about keeping the mind quiet? There may be thoughts coming, but I am not approving them. I am just laughing them. I am just laughing at them without approving them. Now I am just laughing at them, and you see, it's trying to make a self. It's trying to make an individual. I am trying to now minimize that individuation. I am trying to minimize that self-making, eye-making, mind-making, and keep the mind quiet. If I did something wrong, maybe later time I can go and sort of apologize. That is fair enough. That is much better than thinking too much. Because this too much mental proliferation is taking us to all sorts of unnecessary burden, unnecessary agitation. Rather, it is better to take an action then. Now, suppose I did something wrong, I couldn't control myself, and later maybe thoughts are appearing, okay, you did wrong, blah, blah. And rather than promoting it, I better approach the person, become humble and apologize. That's much better, and keep your mind quiet. And suppose that you did really something marvelous, really good, very wholesome. And you don't need to have a second thought. For what? Now suppose that I did a very good Dhamma sermon. Now later time, okay, now mind is trying to appreciate it. Okay, you take this sermon, you take that sermon, you take this example, you take that example, people appreciated that. So again and again, if mind is trying to do that, so that means eye making. That means mind making. Even though it's a wholesome deed, it is trying to prove that there is a person. So this is what we need to minimize. It's a practice, so that is why, I mean, it's a practice, so we can't do it immediately, but slowly we need to understand.
At a time,
yeah.
So at a time when I, you know, got the sense, okay, this is happening, and this is it, this is what I have to do, what I'm trying to do is simply to avoid or to, to suppress it.
Mm. Rather than, I mean, many options are there. Yeah, many options are there. So as you mentioned, probably you can put your attention back to the body. So that's a kind of a diverting your attention so that, I mean, you are not promoting that thinking. So that is one option, no harm. But another option is simply looking at it, looking at your own mind and laugh at it and see how this fellow is trying to view these different kinds of thoughts. Why, I mean, kind of an ignorance trying to cheat me. And you can look at it directly and see that. That's another approach. Different approaches are there, not just one approach, many approaches are there. Whatever suitable, whatever came to your mind at that time, maybe you are free to use. Important thing is how quickly you are coming back, how quickly you are calming down. Minimize mental proliferation. Again, keeping the mind quiet.
Thank you,
Bhante. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not easy.
Yes. Definitely. Yeah. Okay. I think you're welcome. So I think we have spent almost 1.5 hours. There are no any other questions, so that we can wind up the session. So with this time, I mean, we spent fair amount of time discussing Buddha's teaching, and then discussing our own practice. So with that, we were able to accumulate some merits. We share these merits with all the celestial beings, all the past devil relatives, and whoever in need of merits. Let's wish these merits help us also to attain path fruition, Nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya Akasattha bummattha devanaga mahindika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam Akasattha bummattha devanaga mahindika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam Akasattha bummattha devanaga mahindika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparam Idang vo nyati nang ho tu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang ho tu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang ho tu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo ho tu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya sadu sadu sadu